You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Another singer swept that cursed peg out from under him, and he went down. Wedding sword clanging from his numb fingers, lost into the night. And as he lay there, he was still angry. Because for the first time in his life, the sword hadn't brought him peace or answers. He couldn't trust his father any longer. But as a singer stood above him, with halberd raised to ram down, Adolin found that he wanted to. He wanted to find a way to love his father again. He wanted to make peace. He wanted a chance. Not yet, he screamed. Not until I see him again. Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 265, and we're in chapters 120 through 125, ending day 9 of Wind and Truth. Elliot, how are you?
I am excited. We are almost to day 10 of Wind and Truth. And I, before we started this book, did not even think we were going to get there. One of my prevailing theories going into this book was that some sort of wrench was going to get thrown into all of this, and we weren't even going to see 10 days. And then lo and behold, this book is very strictly structured into 10 days, 10 parts. That's the entirety of the book. And we're like a couple pages away to see what day 10 is. So the anxiety level is high. My nerves are like on edge whenever I pick up the book of, what's coming next?
Paul, how are you?
Oh, man. Excited and definitely overwhelmed. We've got a lot to talk about before we even think about starting day 10. But we've made it. This has been a long day. Day 9 was a long 24 hours. But we're about to wrap it up.
All right, Elliot, summarize 120 through 125 if you can.
I will attempt. It's been a little challenging, this book, because so much gets packed into these chapters. But starting with chapter 120, Rhys and Tanavast are battling, wrecking things, desolations. They like create anti-light in one of the scenes. They are smashing the world. And then during one of their desolations, they cause the planes to shatter. And there's some weird stuff happening there that I actually have questions for you guys about what the heck's going on.
Is that because Honor like punches Rhys in the face and like he blows up the rock?
It's going to take us a while to figure it out. So we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. I have questions.
Okay.
But
okay.
They're fighting. The planes get shattered. At the end of chapter 120, Ba'edel Mishram comes to Honor with a offering of peace. Basically, hey, work with me and we can figure out how to solve this. And Honor's like, okay, maybe. And then chapter 121 is back into the Spearman Wall with Adolin. He has been called up to the battle lines. They've called in even the wounded. And it is brutal as he is in amongst the blood and gore of their last stand to try and hold off the Singer army. Over in Shallan's world in chapter 121, she is getting put through the ringer by Odium in the spiritual realm. Just kind of like everybody else we've seen in the spiritual realm here at the end. They end up in this kind of endless cycle of violence and terrible images and all their lowlights of their life getting, you know, flashed before their eyes kind of thing. So Shallan is in the midst of that. Then we jump to Relaine, who is in a vision of the past where he is interacting with Baedo Mishram. He, I think, gets to witness and like be the leader of the listeners breaking away from the singers and kind of severing their tie to Baedo Mishram, which is actually fascinating because it sets up kind of the events of everything else later, of how the listeners are kind of their own thing and they're not as crippled by the Baedo Mishram capture, which we know comes later. We then spend a little time with Renarin as he's seeing a whole bunch of visions. He's trying to figure out, are these from Odium? Are these from Mishram? What's going on here? He does this really cool thing with summoning light, kind of his version of light weaving, and kind of realizing that's his truth watcher power, is that his light that he summons can help him find the truth that he's looking for, or possible truths in front of him. He ends up seeing a lot of different visions in front of him, and he ends up stepping through one where he is with Relaine and kind of steps fully into that relationship that we've seen kind of starting to grow there. Chapter 122 is back with Honor Tanavast, and Tanavast is like falling apart at this point. He is full on at war with himself as he is trying to fight Raze and is losing what it means to be Honor, all these things. Really interesting Noadon reference in chapter 122, which I want to talk with you guys about. And then, oh, wait, before we leave 122, sorry, we're dragging this out. There's a lot of things in here. Tanavast makes a deal with Odium. It's kind of buried in all the Tanavast is going crazy stuff, so I didn't really quite understand it the second time through. Honor tries to get Odium to agree to a contest of champions, and Raze says, nah, why would I do that, bro? And then Tanavast says, ah, because I will deal with your Mishram problem. So there's a little bit of a deal going on here. Honor agrees to betray Mishram to get Raze to agree to the contest of champions, which he does. Just a lot more like political bureaucracy behind all of this than I thought there was going to be. Deals and deals and deals. Okay, chapter 123. We're only halfway through here. Chapter 123. Adolin back in the slog of things with the Spearman line. We see then Yasna, we'll go back to her for a little bit, where she is just crumbling and having a hard time dealing with the beatdown she got kind of logically, philosophically from Taravangian and Odium, and she is really starting to question herself. Odium kind of appears to her and is like taunting her, and then ultimately says, when you're ready, come join me. And then the chapter like ends on, and Yasna wasn't sure if she could say no. Like, oh dear.
Oh dear. Yeah.
And then chapter 124, we get back to Honor. He's still falling apart. Apparently he's like broken up from Cultivation at this point. They're not even seeing each other. Cultivation is not very happy with him. He betrays Mishram, which causes the Shard of Honor to reject Tanavast. That's like the moment, which I think we've seen that buildup maybe coming, where Honor just starts to death spiral at that point, and he causes the recreants. He kind of breaks off a bit of his being into the Stormfather, and the rest of him is just destroyed by Raze and Odium. So boom, there you go. Chapter 125, Wit and Navani are having a little bit of a chat, and Navani's like, oh no, Dalinar's never going to get out. And Wit says he has to. Dalinar has to make it out, because if he doesn't, we can blame Odium for breaking the deal. If Odium causes Dalinar not to arrive at the Contest of Champions, then Odium has broken the terms of the contract and will have to forfeit. So Wit is like, I'm very confident that Dalinar's making it. The question is just going to be which Dalinar comes out.
Yep.
And then the final scene of day 9 at the end of chapter 125 is Adolin, and he sees the final Shardbearer fall. The singers have overrun the place. They've broken through the line. Adolin kind of has this big moment where he thinks he might be ready to just give up, but he decides not to. He decides to stand up. He decides to fight. Yonagon shows up to save him, and they retreat to the safe house. They make it to the safe house, but Aesir has fallen.
And suspiciously, that messenger he sent, or Adolin sent back in like day 3 of one of the technicalities of Aesir falling, has never come back. We don't know the technicalities of Aesir falling yet. Just wanted to throw that out there. Okay. Before we get into Tanavast, we've got quite a bit to talk about Tanavast to start, but we'll do epigraphs first, since this is the end of day 9. Proverbs for towers and war. Zenaz, date unknown. Few combatants win on board or battlefield without having first won the fight against their own minds. Fear the old man who welcomed failure when young. If he has survived this long, he learned. The fool will, when losing, seek to flip the board and scatter the pieces. This is not an adage for towers. In every game are 100 paths to failure, but not always a single one to victory. It is not weakness to admit that another general must fight this foe another day. No general can control a battlefield. He must instead learn to ride it like one does an untamed beast. But you can practice and prepare for that eventuality. The first rule of warfare is to know your enemy. If you can guess what he will do, then you have already won. The second rule of warfare is to know your terrain. Your enemy cannot conquer mountains or rivers. Turn them against him. The third rule of warfare is to attack your opponent where your opponent is weak. Every man is both weak and strong. Confront his weakness with your strength. Not every win is a victory. Not every loss is a defeat. It is often said that the best teacher is failure. This is true, but it is also the best killer. May you be lucky enough in failure to live, and unlucky enough in success to struggle. Rarely, the wise will also seek, in loss, to flip the board and scatter the pieces. But if you do this, it is likely the last time you will play. This is also not an adage for towers. The best players win two of three games against skilled opponents. In other words, even the finest lose a significant amount. Do not set up unless you are prepared for loss. Never assume the game actually replicates real life. Proverbs for towers and war, Zenaz, date unknown. I really enjoyed these. I'm not sure there's too much profound besides the minor profound thoughts that they have to offer, but I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with this is not one that I'm like, oh my gosh, did y'all find the hidden name of a shard in this? And did you impact this has on the Cosmere? This is just Proverbs for Towers and War, which are really neat, and I really like. These are fun little nuggets you get to take and think through the lens of real life and strategy and war. And I love the concept that there's an overarching concept in this that if you want to be great at something, you need to be comfortable with losing and learning from your mistakes, and that even the greatest Towers players would lose a game in a best of three, you know, like that it is complex and complicated, and there are hundreds of ways to lose, you know. So I love these concepts. I've always had a very strong competitive gene in me, and I like improving and practicing and They say you either win or you learn, you know, is like a big concept. If whenever you compete, that either you win or you are learning how to get better, you know? So, and I feel like that this encapsulates that to a degree. And yeah, I really liked it, but no crazy profound implications beyond that.
We're going to bring that soundbite back up when the end of Ghostbloods, or not Ghostbloods, Mistborn Era 4 is revealed here in these epigraphs.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's hidden in here somewhere.
Yep, it's buried there. The whole end of Mistborn Era 4 is described for us right here. No, I didn't get too much out of it either, but the one thing I kept actually getting stuck on is the thing that's like duplicated in here, almost the same. There's two different epigraphs that talk about the loser flipping the board. This is not an adage for towers. That made me think about my fear / prediction / guess that we could be headed for such cataclysmic destruction as Roshar not surviving.
You think Taravangian is going to flip the board?
Yes, exactly what I'm thinking. Well, I don't know if I'm like intentionally trying to tie this to, but that's where my mind went when I read those ones is, could we defeat Odium and Odium just flips the board and just somehow smashes everything, and whether our heroes get out in time is to be seen. I don't know if that's where the stories are going. The chapter headers make me worried it might be. The little crumbling arches that are above each of our chapters that keep getting worse and worse.
Yeah,
and worse.
To end this episode, I was going to have you flip to chapter 126 for us and show us, but we'll get there.
I have not done that yet, so that'll be a live reveal. Scary.
I haven't done that either. Oh, to add to what you're saying, Elliot, I actually really like what you're saying because I feel like I don't have a specific example, but there's definitely many things we've read and we're like, that's a great little note or a little message. And then it does turn out that there is something relatable in there. The last part of the epigraphs says, never assume the game is actually about real life, actually represents real life. But it doesn't say the game never represents real life. So It is very possible that this is cool proverbs, adages for towers and war, but it may be profound reasoning that our heroes are going to rely on in day 10 or beyond, you know, the concept of, you know, you lose a game in the best of three, but like, you know, there's still a best of three, you know, so could absolutely see that.
Alrighty. Not one, not two, but three Tanavas point of view chapters to tackle at the end of day 9 here. And just a quick, well, we can get into the weeds here in a second. But I've been waiting for the pin to drop on this is the moment that the Stormfather was trying to hide. This is what Honor is so ashamed of. Is it the Bot Edo Mishram stuff? Or is that... I never saw it. That right at the end of day 8, when the Stormfather's like, I can't show you, Dalinar. You're going to think I'm a terrible person. And then we watch this old Tanavas documentary. The worst thing he does is betray his oath to Bot Edo Mishram here at the end here. And... because he feels it's the right thing to do. And I'm like, is that it? I feel like there was no reveal there and the Stormfather's just being a bum.
I mean, maybe that's true. I think for me, I think it's simply the fact that Tanavast deviated so far from Honor that Honor like severed the bond.
Right.
So like, think about this. The Stormfather is a sliver of Honor not Tanavast. So the Stormfather, I don't think is Tanavast or has any ties there, but the fact that Honor failed in that Honor and Tanavast together didn't achieve what they were supposed to be doing and had to call it quits and implode themselves. I think it's that the Stormfather is so crushed and embarrassed about. Of which betraying Mishram is like the pivotal point there.
Yeah. As I read these, it felt pretty justified because of the Shattered Planes moment to me. So let's talk about that real quick. Because in chapter 120, Honor gets, you know, real fed up with Odium and goes and like, all right, we're gonna have a SmackDown dragout fight right now. And Raze is like, all right, let's do it. And then they blow up Narok, like on their first punch. And then Honor's like, oh, well, hold up. Whoa. And so to me, that justifies another way out. And if we don't get any more Tanavast in day 10, which I assume we won't, I am back on Team Tanavast, which I wasn't originally.
What do you mean by that? Flesh that out a little more.
I thought Tanavast was going to like completely backstab the humans of Roshar, the listeners, whatever, and Honor was going to be a terrible person and we needed to redeem the shard. Okay. I am not of that thought here at the end of day 9, where a direct confrontation with Odium would have destroyed the planet, therefore we need to backstab him at some point. I'm fully on board with that.
And what about the Mishram side of this, though? Because in doing that, the dishonorable thing that he does is tell Mishram, okay, I'll work with you. Let's do a deal for peace. Oh, surprise. I'm capturing you and banishing you to the spiritual realm in a prison to get Odium to agree to do a duel, a contest of champions with me. Does the betrayal of Mishram cause you problems?
I'm 100% on board that it causes the shard of Honor problems.
Yeah.
Tanavast has the internal dialogue of, because Odium is so dissatisfied with this agreement that they have and pushing against him, he has the internal dialogue of, okay, even if I do this deal with Ba and Mishram and replace Ba and Mishram with Odin, or replace Raze with Ba and Mishram, right, the shard is going to push against me. Therefore, this deal, right, I have with Ba and Mishram, I'm just going to scrap because this is not going to work out. Even if it is Ba and Mishram with Odium, Odium's still going to push against me.
Yeah, which is fascinating and kind of ties back to what we were talking about in our episode last week about who carries more weight, the shard or the vessel.
Yeah.
Is taking Raze down by supporting Ba'edo Mishram and putting her in that place, have you just replaced one wielder of the evil shard of hatred with another and going to face all the exact same problems? Or is there someone who could ethically wield the shard of Odium? I don't know.
I think I do know. I think the answer is no, without another shard. Without Harmony. Like, you're gonna need to balance Odium. And well, that's what Honor just learned. There's nobody we can put on the Odium throne that, right, will be reasonable in the long term.
I think I agree. That's exactly the conclusion that Tanavast gets to. And right, in fact, maybe even a little further, I think this might be in one of the previous chapters, he seems to even actually draw the conclusion that having separated out all these characteristics of God, Adel Nalsium, they're all a little screwed because they're all missing key checks and balances they were supposed to have, and now they don't. So it almost seeming to imply you're not going to get right action from all of these unless you put them all back together, which like half of them have died now at this point. So good luck with
unless
that.
Unless you unite them.
Ah.
Now, I followed all the logic steps that Tanavas did here, that I'm in a lose-lose here. The best I can do is not act and surrender. Like, if my power leaves me, my power leaves me, and I'm going to die. That's his best move, to save Roshar and hope that, you know, someone down the line can fix the problem that he's just set up, or that Odium has put him in checkmate here. And is it... what's the adage for Towers of War here? That it's not weakness to surrender and accept that a general further down the line needs to take the battle. Right? Like, I'm all on board with this, that Tanavast accepts that he got outplayed. I'm done. Maybe somebody can fix it in the future.
I have to also say, just as a side note, we've gotten way more Tanavast POV than I thought we would get. This is like the majority of day 9, I think, has been with Tanavast, which is crazy. I was like, I had it on my bingo board that we would get a Tanavast POV chapter or interlude or something. But I did not think we would get a day, you know, like a day where it's basically, you know, 50% Tanavast. And so it's been really awesome. It's been a flood of information that I feel like I don't even know what to do with entirely. Like, I feel like I need to go back after finishing the book and reread through all this, or maybe even after, like, coming back to this after several books from now and like eras ahead of time, seeing more of this. I kind of expected, if we did see Tanavast POV, that we'd be getting a whatever the major pivotal moment we've been leading up to is going to be, and just seeing it there. But we've gotten quite a bit, so I feel very honored, very fortunate to be in this place. But yeah, it's like a wealth of scenes and information. Finding out the last shard, all these things, like, so much. So, realize that doesn't add that much. That's just an observation, but, like, it's been quite crazy. Also, side note, this doesn't matter at all. It annoys me that they call him Tanner so much. What, like, you have this epic name, Tanavast, and then you're like, hey, Tanner, like, that's cringe.
I think it's supposed to be his last name, because Corvellium takes his last name. Corvellium Avast, Tanavast, like, it's
just Tan.
Yeah, it's like Tanner. It's, you know, and this shortened to Tanavast. I believe it's supposed to be like a surname.
And I see it kind of like Elin with our heralds. Yeah,
exactly.
I get that, but I guess that makes sense, but, you know, Tanavast is so much cooler than Tanner.
But it's the whole... This
should
is
have
actually
just
really
named him John part. Or Joe or something.
That's fine.
Joe of Ast.
The whole point here, Paul, is to prove that this is just a guy and that he's way in over his head. His name is Tanner, and he picked up this shard, and he's way out of his depth and no idea what he's doing, and he gets checkmated by Odium. That's the whole point, is that his name is Tanner.
That's a really good point, and I appreciate that, Trevor, and you are so right.
Well, and my biggest takeaway from not just all these Tanavast scenes, but all the Nail stuff, the Ba'edel Mishram stuff, it feels like the point Brandon is making, at least within the context of his world, is having godlike powers drives you crazy.
Yeah.
Every time.
Doesn't Tolkien do this? Like, immortality, like, drives you insane eventually?
Well,
if you're not an elf.
If you're not an elf, yes.
Right.
That's a big disclaimer.
If you're mortal and you've achieved immortality, bad things happen.
Right.
Yeah.
But in Tolkien's an interesting comparison, actually, because of the elf thing, that the elves are immortal and they increase in knowledge kind of infinitely. And so the oldest, the wisest of the elves, the Elronds, the Círdans, they just know all the things and there's no downside. Whereas
right.
seemingly in Brandon's world, go ahead.
But they were made to do that.
Correct.
The elves were made to be immortal.
Right.
I think the point that Brandon's trying to make is that if you are mortal and you achieve immortality, you weren't created to do that in this world. Like
right. And
you will go insane.
And seemingly maybe like the beings like the dragons seem to perhaps handle this a little better. Like Corvillian is not super crazy.
Ooh, that's an interesting point. Do our immortal shards like handle this better as the Cosmere goes on? That's an interesting thought.
Whereas your raises and your Tanavas and your but even Baal Mishrim, I think, is an interesting part of this too, because Mishrim is a Spren-like creature created by Rays, and Mishrim seems to be kind of fine sometimes, maybe, but then also pretty wild because she's been locked up for so long,
right? Kind
of thing. So I think my takeaway is on and Heralds is our other big case study, is all the Heralds going crazy,
right?
Is I guess you bring up a good question though. I was focusing in on the powers side of it, of being granted powers that are kind of beyond who you're supposed to be, eventually wears on you enough that you just lose it. You're gone, full crazy. I didn't think about the immortality side of it. Maybe it's just the immortality. Is it just the immortality or is it the powers? I'm going to think about that.
Somewhere Hoyd makes this comment of like, I have to store my brains in the scarf or else I go insane.
Yeah. I do remember that.
Is that the end of like Rhythm of War or something? I don't remember. But
and
anyway,
that's also a premise with like copper mines and things like that. It's like your brain cannot, your brain has X amount of capacity for things. And if you, even if you fill it with all these things, then you don't have room for these other things, you know, and stuff like that. So yeah. Insert Wordbreaker and Mistborn as kind of exploring that avenue a lot more.
Well, it's kind of funny too. In one of these scenes where Tanavast is just losing it, he's like full on having an argument with himself. He even goes, you know, why isn't there a power out there that could handle all this? And then the response back is, well, there was. You killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually really interested in this whole dialogue between himself, because it doesn't intro who the other voice is until like halfway through the chapter. And there's this dialogue going back and forth between Tanavast and someone. And it turns out that it's actually Honor and old Tanavast, like old mortal Tanavast, who actually has a moral compass, is trying to like reel in Honor, and Honor has just kind of like taken over at that point. Really fascinating.
Ooh, there's a really fun moment too in the middle of that chapter. I wanted to go ahead and read it because it has some really fun implications, I think, or tie-ins. You guys ready for this? So this is Honor just going full on crazy, like arguing with himself. But he kind of comes to a breaking point where he's thinking, am I even doing any good here? Would they be better off without me? And here's his inner dialogue. I hauled myself up, and with my divine power infused the land. Parts of me were already spread through it, but now I let myself be the land, let my soul align with the rhythms from long ago. And I listened to them, the people whom I should have loved. I was with them as they slowly recovered from this war. I lost myself entirely in hearing their stories as they lived. The woman milking her hogs and singing into the wind. The child playing with her axe hounds upon stones that loved her. The scholar at work trying to untangle my sayings, writing and commenting about them in tomes grown thick. The wanderer on a journey, unwittingly walking the same path Noadon had taken. And I just couldn't help but smile when I read that, because Tanavast is having his epiphany moment, his reckoning. And what figure enters into that dialogue? It's Noadon. And he even references this wanderer on a journey, unwittingly walking the same path as Noadon. Is that not exactly what we're doing here on this podcast? Fourth wall
break? Yeah.
Called Following Noadon?
Yeah.
Like, there's the tie-in. We named this podcast, Trevor, you named this podcast back when we hadn't even read Rhythm of War at that point. Rhythm of War was not even out.
Yeah, Rhythm of War was not released. You came up with
that name, right?
Yep, correct.
And I remember when you picked that name, I was thinking in that moment, well, that's kind of specific, Trevor. We've got a whole series left to go here. Like, what is that gonna tie into? And this felt like the moment where it was like, man, we really have been following Noadon this whole time.
You're welcome.
It all comes back.
I'm a genius.
Yeah, I was not convinced we would get Noadon again, but we have, and I'm really grateful because it makes a big deal about it early on, about this early king and his contributions to writing the Way of Kings, right? The in-world Way of Kings is like a huge deal and very pivotal for Dalinar, who you could probably argue is the overarching like protagonist of this story. Obviously, we have many major protagonists, but as we're coming down to the final hours, the final day of this first half of the story here, like this moment, currently, it all is resting on Dalinar's shoulders. There's a lot of things going on, but ultimately, Dalinar is the one who is in this Contest of Champions agreement with Odium. And what are we going back to now? The fundamentals, if you will, the Noadon. And I've gotten super excited. I feel like this is somehow within a single story, I'm getting nostalgia for early things in the story, which yeah. is kind of crazy. To be fair, we've been reading this for like 5 years now, so yeah. Nostalgia is valid here. But yeah, that's what it feels like is going back, and I've been all for it. I'm like, give me more Noadon.
I'm still waiting with bated breath for this moment here, right? You know, like Dalinar walking up the stairs with his copy of the Way of Kings written by Noadon. Like, come on. That's got to happen on day 10, surely. Surely.
Oh, it's coming. I'm sure it's coming. I had one other Tanavast honor thing to bounce off you guys. It's actually towards the beginning. We referenced it a little bit earlier. Chapter 120. The planes get shattered. Narok gets destroyed. Somebody has on their bingo board, we learn what shatters the planes, right?
Like, I think it's Paul.
We thought we'd answered this. But this chapter threw me for a loop, because before we got this big reveal, oh, there was a fourth moon and it's sitting beneath the shattered planes. So I thought we jumped to the conclusion, oh, that's what broke the planes. This moon crashed down. But that's not what happens in this chapter. Odium and Honor are going at it. Trevor, in your description, Odium or Honor smacks Odium in the face and the shockwave off of that like goes down below them onto the land. But as that's happening, Honor has this moment where he's like, oh shoot, there's a fourth moon that's buried beneath this land and it's made of something weird and it's reacting to our power. It's not their battle caused the moon to fall. The moon is already there on the ground and it just like nuclear explosions because it reacts to them. What was your guys's? Are you guys following that? Is that your take as well?
I am following it. It would imply that there was a fourth shard, or more specifically, a first shard on Roshar before Tanavest and Cultivation even got there.
And that's the deeper implication that's not spelled out necessarily, in my opinion. But yeah, maybe. And it even says this, which maybe we could tie this into that. I'll read it. I realized too late that there was something strange about this land beneath this city. Pieces of something fallen. A fourth moon in splinters. It reacted to us, and I saw people there. New ones. Watchers who had been hidden from me. Is that just the listeners, or is that something crazy new? The new people watching.
I could be convinced either way. Unfortunately, I don't know.
Is there, yeah, I can probably explain this one away. Is there, well, man, no, see, this has been hard. And this is what I've been wrestling with maybe the most from this episode, trying to make sense of it. Okay. Sorry. Going back a little bit before we talk about these people. You're talking about the split, the shattering sequence. I could be wrong. I probably am wrong, in fact. But I thought it was hinted at that what they came into contact with that somewhat caused the shattering was the essences that they mention of Roshar, like the wind and the stone. And things like that. I'm probably wrong on that. Well, but I wasn't. That's the mental picture I have in my head. Not necessarily a fourth shard that was there before they got there.
Let me read the next couple sentences because it might be where you're getting that from. So picking up right where I left off. Those pieces of the sky, they sheltered from the eyes of God. That was not aluminum. It was something greater. Something that responded to our clash, the ground liquefying in a pattern dictated by the tone and the strange nature of the place. Maybe that's hinting at like some of the stuff you're thinking of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's where I am getting it from. So
I have to mention the term because I'm sure someone's screaming at each of us that we have to mention the term. It has to be a god metal. And by that, I mean the equivalent of Atium or Laracium. There's an equivalent power that has been crash-landed here before Tanavast and Cultivation showed up, and I assume it's a god metal. That's the assumption I've already made, that therefore fourth shard or originally first shard.
And maybe that's consistent with our Mistborn Era 2 stuff, right? Because we end up making literal nuclear bombs. In Mistborn Era 2, when we combine god metals.
Correct.
Or split and god metals, I forget.
So there's some remnant of a shard on Roshar that is having some cool interactions with Honor and Odium as they're right on top of the shattered planes.
But all of, well, okay, I'm going to second guess myself as I speak here. But all of our shards are accounted for. Or are they? Like, we've just gotten them all named. We kind of know where some of them are, but then there's like three or four that are notably, and no one could find so-and-so.
Correct. That's my point, is right after the shattering, 10,000 years ago, whatever, Honor and Cultivation say, hey, we're going to meet up in on Roshar after all this is done. There could be one of the nomads, you know, of invention or virtuosity or valor or mercy, you know, any of the ones that we don't have a home for, I think could have shown up on Roshar, said nope, and then moved on. And then when they moved on, their moon crashed or, you know, whatever. That this is all headcanon, but this is where I'm at. Of this has to be a god metal that we don't know about, because even Honor doesn't know what it is. And, well, Braze is a little different with the core of metal that, like, attracts him or whatever. But that's different. Are you guys tracking with me?
I think I am.
Yes. Yes, I think so. I'm still just holding all this very loosely.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we can't know yet. And that's what's kind of eating me up. Is I'm thinking of all the, like, options. I'm like, so we know, for example, invention roams around. Had invention roamed around here before they got there? Or is this before Reason, quote, left? Or, like, we don't know Reason was there, but, like, we know that Reason is not here. Could imply that Reason was there at some point. And so I'm just, and I feel like there's so many options that I feel so unconfident in picking one.
I'd be willing to throw a theory that it's invention, because we just got the mention, and he showed up, taught the singers, the original singers of Roshar, who predate Honor and Cultivation, music theory, you know, taught them the science behind music and how to create things with music and what it can do with light, cultivating, you know, their plants with the gemstones. All he shows up, does that, and then leaves. Or something in that vein.
I buy it. I think it might just make perfect sense.
Anything else on the Tanifast stuff? Okay. We will save Adolin for last. So let's do some short segments here between some other members that get a couple small nods in here. Chapter 121, we get Shallan, and she's getting tossed around in the spiritual realm. What did you guys get from this short Shallan segment? I didn't get that much. She doesn't meet with Marais, does she? Like, there's the whole, we're going to fight the next time we see each other, and then that's not here, right?
I thought that was here, but I could be wrong about that. They kind of look at each other, and is this when Marais kind of admits a bit of his goal? He's like, I've been sentenced to not leave Roshar unless I do these things, and I really want to leave Roshar because there's cool places out there that I want to go see. He's like that kind of
I think that was 119 from last week, but maybe
yeah.
I'm a little foggy.
If it is, then that's worth mentioning still, because we didn't say it on our last episode.
Sure.
Yeah, I think all of that is in 119. In 121 here, she gets, like, sucked out of that vision with Marais. But yeah, they very much leave it on the footing of our final contest is yet to happen here with Shallan and Marais. And then she just kind of gets sucked into a very violent watching herself kill people over and over vision, because
she beheads Marais. Yeah, she, like, chops Marais's head off, and then, like, blood goes everywhere, and then
Tin and Yasna and Sabariel. Yeah, she kills about a lot of people.
Oh man, I forgot last episode we were trying to figure out who the assassin was from Yasna, and I looked it up and then never fit it in the episode. It's Liss, L-I-S-S. I would have never come up with that name. Just had to throw that out there before I forgot.
There's your trivia for next time we go to Dragonsteel.
Yeah. All right. We have a big Renarin segment for 121, and Relaine segment, I should say, more accurately. And Relaine takes the form of one of his old ancestors that originates the listeners who abandon Ba'edo Mishram and walk away from her. And Bot in a mishroom confronts him and says, hey, we're winning. Why would you walk away? And then she becomes actually lucid and say, oh, hey, you're Relaine and we need to figure this out. Come find me. And then Renarin and Relaine end up saying, we need to go find Bot in a mishroom. We need to decode what she's trying to tell us, I think is what they end up saying, which I feel like we've been saying this for days at this point, and now it's finally going to happen that we're going to go find Bot in a mishroom on day 10.
I certainly hope so. I'm trying to pick up all the threads of this is what we've started and what I would like to see finished in this book. Bot in a mishroom and finding Bot in a mishroom is way at the top. Maybe probably not number one, because there's a lot of crazy things like the Contest of Champions happening and being an awesome scene is probably number one for me, but Bot in a mishroom is like two or three, if not. So we've invested a lot all the way back to like Kalak and the conversations that they had in day one or two there with Shallan. Ever since then, I'm like, all right, this is where we're headed. And that's been the whole point of a lot of these the characters we're seeing in this chapter of Shallan, Renarin, Relaine has been tied into this. Let's find Bot in a mishroom and figure this out storyline. So I'm expecting to see this. If not, I will openly say I will be very disappointed.
Surely it has to happen in day 10. I'm just surprised it's in day 10. I thought we would have resolved this by now, but
that's fair.
All right, we have Yasna. Unless you had something else for Narn and Relaine, Elliot.
I was just going to say real quick that Mishram is talking to Relaine in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's confusing, as a lot of these spiritual realm scenes are. Relaine is in the vision as one of his ancestors talking to like the old Bot in a mishroom. But yet again, I think we've seen this before. It seems like the modern day mishroom kind of interjects every once in a while. And the lines that we get from like modern day mishroom are severely bipolar. First, it's, yep, I hate you, I'm going to tear you apart. And then the very next line, a paragraph later, is, you are the bridger of minds, the one who is of both worlds. You can heal us. And then not very long after that, it's, you must find me so I can kill you, so I can kill you, so I can kill you. It's like, oh my goodness, what?
Yeah.
I don't know if
make
I
up your mind, lady.
Yeah, seriously. I don't know if I want our folks to find Mishram or not. I don't know that it's going to go well if they do.
Yeah. All righty. The conversation I'm most excited for, it's actually second to Adolin, but close second, this Yasna conversation with Teravangian in 123. Yasna has lost the debate from last episode. Teravangian comes to take his victory lap in front of Yasna, and he gives her the option of, once you're done grieving, once you've come to your senses, come find me, I'll let you join me. And she doesn't immediately say no. And I was like, okay, holy cow. I was, you know, very, I hesitate to say excited, because that would be Yasna joining Teravangian. But that is fascinating. That is fascinating. If we end the book, Teravangian literally in control of all Roshar with Dalinar and Yasna under his, like, in his general staff. Fascinating. What do you guys think?
It is fascinating. This is not something that I expected. So obviously no decision has been made. I think that's important to clarify. No decision has been made, but as of right now, where we're leaving off, it is definitely hinted at or pushed for us, the reader, that Yasna might do this. Yasna might join with Teravangian. I am still in the camp that Yasna is not going to do so. But it is like, whoa, that's a twist. Like that gets crazy if that is the case. And I feel like I've been wrestling with for books now of what is Yasna's arc? What is Yasna's, like, you know, I feel like we have clear plans and arcs for Kaladin, Shallan, Dalinar, even like Renarin and Adolin, Relaine, with and things like that. Yasna has never felt fully clear to me. Currently, as is, her purpose is kind of on this like political, logical, scientific learning, like discovery and contribution as a professional and a scholar. But I'm like, that's not all that her character's going to go through, I anticipate. And so if this is the case, and that, like, that's not what I was expecting, but would get pretty crazy pretty quick. So what if, I don't know, there's a million things that could happen, because we're also, I feel like we've been assuming that Dalinar's going to lose the Contest of Champions. It's still possible he doesn't.
Sure.
It is possible he does not. So what if people start to give up and then Dalinar ends up even more isolated because people have joined Odium and, you know, there's a lot of, even like beating Odium means he's hurting people who he loves or something like that. It could get crazy. It gets super crazy. So all in all, Elliot may have more to say about this, but all in all, I'm still like, no decision has been made. I think as we go into day 10, this is like the planting the seed of doubt in the reader's mind. Ooh, is Yasna going to go? And no, she's not. But is she going to go? Wait, no, she's not. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm holding this loosely, but Brandon is really putting the heat on with the way he's setting this chapter up.
I'm just really fascinated at the concept of, right before this, Fen asked, what would you do in my situation? And she had to admit that she would join. And then Teravangian turns and offers it to her. I bet she's going to say no. She's not going to be able to actually bring herself, if yeah. she was really in Fen's shoes, to take it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Elliot. I'm not even letting you talk. But the last thing I need to say is, you're right, because he asks, what would you do in her shoes? You would do it. Okay, so then do it. And she's going to be like, no, because, and probably something of like, you know, that there's a difference of kind of a big point that Yasna has been getting at, and something that she's maybe misunderstood herself, is holding expectations for what other people should do in their agreements with her, but not what she would do in an agreement with them, like a selfish outlook. And I think this may work, it could work for good in her acknowledging that and being like, I would take it. You shouldn't. And here's why. And not only here's why, but here's why I'm preaching to myself now. Here's why I should also not take it. Even though I know, like before this conversation, I would maybe rationalize that and take that offer, you know, maybe something like that. I don't know. Anyways. Elliot, I'll let you talk now. I think I've cut you off like two or three times.
No, you're good. You've got a lot of good thoughts there and a line that I think I generally agree with. I think if I had to put my chips down, it would be on Yasna not actually joining Odium. I think his offer is specific. I will make you a fused. That's what's on the table here, and she's not immediately saying no to it. I don't think she'll say yes to that. However, I think Teravangian, specifically the Teravangian side of this Todium pair, has uncovered what I think Yasna is going to have to deal with, and that's the classic journey before destination. We've had Teravangian and Dalinar discussions where they're on opposite ends of the spectrum. Taravangian is destination all day. He'll do whatever it takes to get to what he thinks is the best destination. Dalinar's the opposite. Dalinar is, no, I'm going to do the next right thing first and then make it to the destination secondly. I think Jasnah is maybe more on the destination side of that equation than she would have admitted before what's all happened here. Taravangian says in these scenes, we are the same. And I think that's a bit of a stretch. I think that's putting it a little too far. But has he touched a nerve? Has he touched on a bit of where Jasnah is in that camp? Yes. Is Jasnah willing to assassinate someone for the greater good? She is. That is not journey before destination. So which camp is Jasnah in? I think she's going to have to deal with that. Will she actually take Odium up on this offer? I don't think so.
I agree. All right, over to quick, I think it's Navani point of view at the end of, or at the beginning of 125 here. And Hoid tells her, she's all super concerned about tomorrow, as she should be, that Dalinar's not going to return. And Elliot, as you said in your summary, Hoyt's like, he has to. I mean, if Taravangian's really the one keeping him in there, he's going to bring him back because he has to attend the contest. So do you guys have any doubts that the contest is going to take place tomorrow?
I've wrestled with this quite a bit. Wrestled with it quite a bit because, if you remember, before we picked up this book, started reading, my theory was we were going to see the contest early in the book, and it wasn't going to be what we expected. Whether Dalinar loses, whether it's not actually what it seems, it doesn't happen, or whatever. Something is up. Something doesn't go according to plan. And then the rest of the book is dealing with that. Instead, what we have had is we are leading up to this contest of champions for the whole book. We've been leading up to it for the whole book. So there has to be something. And if the contest does not happen, there better be a really, really good reason why not. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a fight, you know, but there has to be some serious payoff for this. We don't know what that will be. Maybe we'll find out soon. Maybe I'm hoping we'll find out rather soon. But there's gotta be the payoff. It can't be like, oh nope, contest isn't happening, but oh look, we found Ba'edo Mishram and that's the payoff. Like, nope, like, we've gotta have something with the contest, in my opinion. For good or bad, like some kind of big impact. Still could go a million ways on whether it's an actual contest or whether it's a no-show. I'm expecting it to not be a no-show, but also, hold on. Let me just make sure I get this straight, by the way. The thing they're talking about here is that if Dalinar does not show up, then Odium forfeits?
Correct. The conclusion that Hoy jumps to is Odium was keeping you guys and tormenting you in the spiritual realm. He knew you guys were in there. So if he keeps Dalinar in there, then he has obstructed the contest and he forfeits.
I suppose that does make sense. My natural instinct of hearing the contract, oh, if your opponent doesn't show up, you forfeit. I'm like, what kind of deal or agreement is that? Because all Dalinar has to do is not show up, you know?
Right.
It's all he's got to do. So I thought that was odd. Whenever I first heard that, I kind of was taken aback for a second. But given the context of things, as we were talking about, that makes sense. But that seems like an odd pretense, though. That we'll have it known.
The quick assumption that Hoid makes there, though, I don't know if it's actually correct. Because Odium doesn't actually see Dalinar in the spiritual realm anymore. And because he's been watching the Tanavast movie for the last day. So I don't know if that's actually super accurate, but you know, oh well. Okay. Adolin time. Adolin spends all night in the shield wall, and eventually it falls, and he's about to give up. He's about to accept his death, and he says, man, I should pull the quote out. He says, in short, I still have something I need to settle with my dad. And he stands up and he keeps fighting, and then Yanagon and crew come in to save him, and then they all make it out in some like back fake alley or fake hidden street or something. I don't remember. But they have made it to the safe house, Yanagon and May and everybody else important in Aesir. So what'd you guys get?
Adolin goes through a bit of an arc here in these series of chapters here. Adolin hasn't been so much a focus of day nine, but the arc that he goes through is notable, specifically in like these few chapters here that we're talking about this episode, and that he, as he's getting worn down and seeing the carnage around him in the spear line and doubting his own abilities, really feeling the weight of his crippledness at this point, he starts to hate Dalinar. There's a scene where he's hitting a low and he starts to blame everything on Dalinar and just bring up some pretty vile stuff. I mean, which granted, Dalinar has done some pretty vile stuff. You know, he's bringing up some valid concerns of killing his own wife, Adolin's mother, all of that kind of stuff. But he kind of gets to the point where you're worried about, is Adolin just going to snap here? Is he just going to lose it? And then maybe even worse, like die in that moment. Is he going to lose it, fall to kind of hatred for his father, and then just die with never even like revisiting that? That would be terrible. And then he doesn't. So the turning point, what I think you're referencing, Trevor, although
can I read it?
Please do, because I wasn't exactly sure what you were referring to.
Okay, so another singer swept that cursed peg out from under him, and he went down, wedding sword clanging from his numb fingers, lost into the night. And as he lay there, he was still angry, because for the first time in his life, the sword hadn't brought him peace or answers. He couldn't trust his father any longer, but as a singer stood above him, with halberd raised to ram down, Adolin found that he wanted to. He wanted to find a way to love his father again. He wanted to make peace. He wanted a chance. Not yet, he screamed. Not until I see him again. He kicked the singer in the knee with his peg. She stumbled. That's what I was referring to.
Okay. I'm with you now. And that's the big moment where he chooses not to give up. He chooses not to give up. He fights back. And the very next sentence after that is where Yanagon arrives to his rescue, and he's saved in that moment. But despite the rescue that comes in, like the fact that he makes that choice in that moment, I do feel like is pretty big. That it's his own little, like I said, hit the depths of despair, make that decision to soldier on and see the light of day kind of character arc, all wrapped up in like three chapters.
Yeah. I genuinely thought we might be losing Adolin there. I haven't thought that of many of our characters, certainly not Adolin. But Brandon had me. He got me on that one. I thought he was toast.
Oh, have you ever done the thing where you're reading? I'll let you weigh in, Paul, because I know you got some thoughts on this in a second. But have you ever been reading a book? This chapter was that moment for me where you just like you start to grit your teeth and you're like, oh no. Oh no. Oh shoot. Oh shoot. I was all the way there. I thought Adolin was gone.
I agree. This one was so I've definitely felt like there's some serious protagonist plot armor in this story, and a lot of situations that people should probably die, but they don't, and that's fine. But this one was like, okay, he really looks like he's at the end of his rope. He is at the end of his rope for sure. He kind of has this, wait, my part in the story isn't done yet. I can't die, and then get saved, which was a little bit awkward. But yeah, no, I fully agree. I was feeling the exact same things where you're like, you're waiting for the moment where it's like, oh, and that spear pierced him and he falls to his knees, like type of thing. Like, you know, I was right there expecting that this could go either way. You know, this was, he felt more dead to me in this scene than he did when he has his, like, rigged duel in Words of Radiance.
Yeah. Anything else?
I don't think so, other than just to point out that Adolin is still alive.
He is.
He has escaped with Yonagon. They've made it to the safe house, which, Trevor, you pointed out, I think, at the very beginning of this episode, that we never heard exactly what the rules are for.
Correct.
Whether Aesir has fallen or not. And I think at one point they were thinking, oh, as long as Yonagon is here, as long as he has residency in this city, we might claim it. So are we about to go into a, like, smoke out the rats scenario where they're going to be hidden in this box and the singers are going to be, the fused are going to be trying to track them down and find them before the end of the 10th day kind of scenario? Is rescue going to come in time before they find them? I mean, we've got a couple of sources of help potentially. Maya is still on the way. She's in this scene.
Yep.
Adolin and Maya are chatting. Well, more like screaming at each other almost. Adolin is like falling down and he's like, no. And Maya is, you know, I'm coming.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I almost forgot. This was the moment I was expecting. If Adolin is saved here, if Adolin is saved here, I thought it would be by Maya coming back. That this was the moment that Maya's going to come back, swoop in, save Adolin with whatever whoever she's bringing back with her. And that's not what happened, which really surprised me. I also, the reasons why I thought Adolin could die is because of the circumstances he's in. He looks like he's dead. The reasons I thought he would live is I thought Maya's going to show up at the last second, save him. And he's having this moment this whole time of, I still have things I need to talk to my dad about. I need to talk to Dalinar. And you're like, okay, well, if he does die now, then that is tragic. That is tragedy, which I kind of thought we were going to get. I thought we might be getting this tragedy of Adolin dies and does not get to have this like reconciliation with Dalinar, which would be really brutal for us. But he does live. Yonagon kind of leads the getting him out assault here, and he does make it. So, happily ever after.
I love the line right after what I read was, Adolin does the whole heroic, like, you know, leave me, go on. Cole, it's like, storm that. Yonagon's not leaving until you do, so get over here. He goes, yeah. Oh, okay.
That was really funny. I appreciated Colot a lot.
All right, Elliot. That brings us to the end of day 9. We have interludes next week, but do you have a theme for us?
I do. I do have a theme for day 9, which was a longer day. I think it was day 8 was really short, and there wasn't a whole lot of chapters there. Day 9 filled in that gap, and there's been quite a few chapters with a lot of big moments. I mean, this is it. Sander Lanch all the way. It is dropping big stuff on us left and right, which I thought was going to be difficult to tie together until a word that I think is going to do it justice for me jumped into my mind. I might have used this word before. I honestly can't remember either in this book or previous ones, but the word that came to me that I definitely think ties this day together for me is reckoning. We see a bunch of characters meet their reckoning in this day. Characters who are usually on top of things and either have completely gotten crushed or have reached a new low. Some of our characters are at the bottom. A bunch of our characters, I mean, we're in full-on Valley of the Shadow of Death at this point. Our characters need some Psalm 23 pretty quick here. They need to find their hope, find their eucatastrophe real fast here. I mean, we've got Yasna, who we've talked about quite a bit this episode and last, of how her world is just shattered, and that she's questioning her philosophy. She's considering joining Odium. She is just lowest of the lows that we've ever seen Yasna, for sure. Tanavast, we got to see into his world quite a bit, and he met his own reckoning and has been absolutely broken by the process that he's gone through of trying to fight Raze and trying to hold the Shard of Honor, which ultimately ends up breaking and shattering. We see Adolin losing the Battle of Azir, like we just talked about, staying alive, but losing, and the Singers overrunning the city. We see Zeth becoming truthless, giving up, facing down his father, being told to stand down and doing so. We see Sigzil renouncing his oath, killing Vienta, making her a Deadeyes to try and save her from Moash. We see Renarin and Verlaine trying to figure out what is happening with Mishram. Is Mishram going to kill us? Is Mishram trying to help us? Are we trying to help Mishram? A bit of a, what do we do next? And then maybe an arguably even the most epic scene of this day, we have Kaladin, I think, is the one character in all of this who seems to be on a little bit of a high, actually, because he brings the reckoning to Nail. Nail, who has stood firm in his mantra and his beliefs and his adherence to the law, breaks in a duel to Kaladin because Kaladin whips out a flute and plays a song. And the reckoning that is brought to a herald in that scene. I think we're going to see more reckoning in day 10. So I'll have to come up with a new word for what happens there. But at the end of day 9, I think that's where we're at with most of our characters.
Sounds good. Thank you for that. We will be for episode 266. Hold that thought. We'll be in interlude 17 through chapter 128 for next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Did you want to do a little bit of a reveal here at the end as we flip into day 10?
Strike that. Okay. Yeah, Elliot, can you flip to 126 for us?
I can certainly try. And yeah, if you guys have your books handy, maybe you can do the same. So I've not done this. I've not gone past the page that we ended on. End of day 9. So interludes are next. I'm going to just flip over those for a second.
I was going to say, I haven't even seen who the interludes are for yet.
I haven't either.
I'm not even going to say that. I'll let you guys find that later. So okay. Here we go. I'm on the day 10 page. There's all of our POVs there. I'm not reading.
I see a lot of names. I can't read them from here.
There's a lot of names on there. I'll have to read those later. But Trevor, are you ready for this? Are you wanting to do this at the same time as me here?
I'm ready.
Okay. We're going to turn to day 10 and see what awaits us. Here we go. Flip it.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, man.
Don't read too much.
Oh, man. I'm not reading any words.
Our arch is a little bit crumbly.
Yeah, it's better days for sure.
Ooh.
It is.
It's not looking too hot.
It's not completely gone, though.
Yeah.
And that might be telling. Like, it's...
That's a good point.
It's pretty fallen at this point. Like, notice even the, like, where the number and the name is, it's, like, fallen off the top and fallen down onto where... Normally there would be the like logo. You know how every character has like a different logo for their chapter? The logo's not there. It's been crushed by the chapter header falling onto it. But I half wondered if we were going to flip the page and that arch would be just completely dust, which it's not quite yet.
Yet. Could change.
Man, we finally made it to day 10. About to.
Next week is day 10. We will do interlude 17 through 128 for next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul Elliott.
Toodles.
On we go.